The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum, and to talk about some of the big stories of the week, we're joined by Cormac Devlin, Fianna Fáil TD for Dunleary, Deputy Party Whip and Spokesperson on Dublin, Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland Editor with the Irish Independent, and Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal, Party Spokesperson on Workers' Rights, Enterprise, Trade and Employment. We have to start with Finland. I mean, is there footage, Louise, of you somewhere dancing in the dead of night?
I nearly wish there was. I'd love to be sitting here thinking, God, now I hope that never gets out. No, I'm just too boring. Unfortunately, there's no, unless someone got a camera phone out at the last time I was at a wedding doing the old rock the boat. I can't imagine I've too much to fear.
And what's your take on it? I mean, let her be.
She's a 36 year old woman. I'd have more concern about her bringing bringing our country into NATO. Being honest with you, she's 36. I remember being 36. It was quite a while ago now. I'm not sure I did much dancing then either, but I don't think there was any harm in it. Yeah. She was at a private event. She was with her friends. She was letting her hair down. I think maybe
seemingly she does quite regularly, and that's one of the issues. You know, the country's divided. Some say, good on her. It's her own private time, and it's better that she lets off steam this way than something else. And as long as she runs the country. Cormac, you know, we're talking about a lot of po-faced discussions about whether or not the leader of a political party or the leader of a country should ever be seen like this. I simply cannot imagine Micheál Martin in that situation. Just cannot.
Well, look, I think from her own perspective, I think Louise is right. I mean, she's a young woman. Yes, she's the leader of the country, but she is entitled to a party like anybody else. She's human at the end of the day. She's letting her hair down, and I don't think there's anything to it. In fact, I think, you know, the issue that's arisen now, you know, is more maybe embarrassment, not on her part, but people trying to cause embarrassment to her.
Yeah.
And I think she shrugged it off very successfully.
I mean, what kind of person do you have at a house party in your own house that leaks stuff on you?
And she said that, I think, as well. Yeah.
The equivalent here, of course, would be Micheál Martin being caught eating a biscuit, because that would be the most dramatic thing I think he'd get up to. But the issue about her not being contactable, I mean, ultimately her security detail were outside the door all the time. So it's not as if she was out of touch as you say, a nuclear bomb was
but in terms
by the Russians.
You know, the party animal, I suppose Leo would be the most likely. You know, he's young and he, you know, obviously likes to party, so he might be the most likely.
Well, I've seen British politicians get up to, or I've heard of British politicians getting up to far worse things. They'd be more concerning than what she was on.
Let's get on to more serious matters. And the student accommodation crisis is something that's preoccupying everybody. And Sinn Féin are anxious to get the goods. Louise.
Well, I think we have this every year, but this year it appears to be even more acute. But, you know, there are solutions that are there. I know that there's a strategy in place that doesn't seem to have worked. I don't know why the government are sticking with the strategy till 2024, since the strategy simply hasn't worked. I think if we were directing money towards the higher education institutions to let them go, with my understanding is they have shovel-ready projects for about 3,000, that would deliver about 3,000 beds. What they need is a bit of support from the government. That is what I think we need to see, is bespoke accommodation. The strategy.
Yeah, that's what Simon Harris, by the way, promised on this programme yesterday.
But, you know, the strategy of leaving it to the private sector, as is so beloved of this government and the previous one, which obviously was pretty much the same as this government, it just didn't work.
But in fairness to Simon yesterday, he did say, this is what we want to do. The colleges are to be, they may employ builders and contractors to do it, but they will be the developers, if you like, with help from the state. If money is the blockage, then we'll give them money. But how long does it take to get them the money?
Well, they have shovel-ready projects that are ready to go in the higher education institutions. What we just need to see is a bit of delivery. And I mean, the minister, he was the same when he was the Minister for Health. He was great at the chat. But I mean, you have to actually deliver this. The private sector did not work when they were left to their own devices. I'm glad that the government have recognised that their strategy isn't working. They're going to change it now. That's welcome. This is what we have been calling for, is to give the money directly to the HEIs and let them build the accommodation. But in the intervening time, Pat, if I could just finish, there are students going to get their results on the 2nd of September who will not be able to find accommodation. And every year we hear those stories about students that are stuck, that are struggling, and they want to go to college, but this is the single biggest barrier they're facing.
Unfortunately, this year, I mean, we knew it was going to be difficult, particularly with the Ukrainian crisis as well. Since the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, there's been additional pressure on accommodation of all types across the country. But in terms of student accommodation itself, there's actually 1,000 beds extra this year than there were last. And in terms of accommodation on site, you're right, the minister has spoken about assisting third level institutions to develop their own lands for student accommodation purposes. And I think that would be a good fit.
Yeah, it's not going to be that rapid, though. I mean, there are 1,200 beds coming up on stream this year, but half of them at the beginning of the year, and the other half, the other 600, are going to come on stream sometime later in the year.
And the cost of them as well, Pat. You know, like some of these are going to cost 1,100, 1,200 euros a month to rent. I mean, that is prohibitively expensive for people on normal incomes.
In terms of the Simon Harris messaging, and it kind of comes, it's in the middle of what Louise is talking about as well. And that is about who is taking on the debt. So yes, it looks like some of the third level institutions are saying, yeah, we're quite happy to develop these ourselves, but we don't necessarily want all this debt on our balance sheet. So is there potential there for government financing, or that at least that debt would sit on other people's books and be paid back, obviously gradually over time? But I mean, that just seems to be, it's not a minor blockage, because you're talking significant sums of money here, but it does seem that
thinking outside the box,
the
idea, it appears, would be to give them money, grant aid them to build in exchange for affordability. In other words, you cannot charge 1,200 euros a month for a room. You cannot do that. If you want to get the money from the state to do these things, now, many colleges might balk at having their hands tied, you know, like rent pressure zones. They might say, no, we won't embark on this if there are too many preconditions attached.
Well, the housing agency is there to assist and to work with the third level institutions, and that's important. But other measures have taken place just to try and alleviate the pressure that we knew would be there. One of those is the rent a room scheme, and it's been expanded to allow for people who are on social welfare to rent a room up to 14,000 euro tax free, which is going to increase the traditional digs type of accommodation for students who are looking to rent a room effectively away from home, be it in a city or elsewhere.
Okay. Again, the idea of 14 grand. If you've got a spare room in your house, it's nice money, it's clean money, there's no tax implication at all. I'm just wondering why people might be reluctant to take it on. Fionnán, do you
COVID have any? Did cause a disruption to that as well. The notion of, you know, having somebody outside of your family, you're very often looking at elderly people whose kids have grown up and therefore they have an empty nest and have the space to bring students in. Now, you have, you know, the usual problems about behaviour and so on and so forth, but COVID does appear to have caused a bit of an alarm bell to go off there in that regard, in terms of if you have an outbreak or an epidemic like that again, where you have somebody from outside of your family unit in the house, and how you control that. So that was
I
a concern.
I think also, though, Fionnán, you know, the fact that we are in the middle of a housing and accommodation crisis, so an awful lot of people living in overcrowded accommodation that quite simply don't have the capacity to take an extra person in. Their house is already overcrowded. I think that is a factor that can't be overlooked. And I mean, I hear from the government, you know, it's the same scheme, there's no addition to it. And the hope is that, I've heard the hope is that hundreds, and then maybe the hope is that thousands, but in truth, I'm not sure that, you know, that they can put their hands on the numbers. So we're still going to be left, as we have been warning the government for months and months and months, we're still going to be left in a situation where students, some of them will have to defer their college courses because they simply can't find anywhere to live. And I just think that's
really
wrong.
But isn't
it
extraordinary that, I don't know how many third level students we have every year. Is it about 60,000 people do the Leaving Cert every year? So, you know, give or take, some of them won't go on to third level, but then you'll have people from previous years going into third level, overseas students and all. So within a relatively short amount of time, now, not all the accommodation is great, but 46,000 Ukrainians have found places to live. So, you know, there's something kind of maybe about our own reaction, or our own lack of thinking outside the box, that allows us to house badly or otherwise, 46,000.
But a lot of that now was temporary accommodation, because remember...
But they're still here.
Those people, no, absolutely. But those people are going to be moving out of student accommodation. Mm. There's something else that was a bit worrying that I heard Minister Harris talking about, was that some of them aren't going to be leaving for a couple of months. So you'd have to wonder then where the students are going to be staying again, you know, if it is a case that that accommodation is not going to be available to them. And absolutely, I mean, you know, people stepped up to the plate. But of course, the other thing is we have hundreds of people who have volunteered a room in their home who haven't been checked, who haven't been approached, and that offer has not been taken up. So, you know, I mean, the government should be pulling every lever on this. And I don't think they are.
One of the proposals I put to Minister Harris yesterday, and it's just something that's been preoccupying me, that there are many, many Irish families who will go to Kerry, to Wicklow, to Donegal, and live quite happily in mobile homes for the entire summer. Okay, the weather's supposed to be benign and so on. Is there not a case, as we do for schools or even in hospital emergency departments, to put up prefabbed accommodation that has a lifespan maybe of no more than 20 years, but is perfectly adequate and comfortable and warm to house students on campus land? Well, there's plenty of land.
There is, and there's about 14,500 student beds at present in the system. And if you take my own area of UCD, for example, the student accommodation, some of that is being decanted of Ukrainians at present, and they're going to Ballyogan, for example, in that temporary type accommodation that you speak of.
No, but I mean, there are students in the Netherlands living in container type accommodation that is made from old shipping containers. There are people who are living in the back garden in a Shomra, for instance, in their parents' house. There's all sorts of stuff going on that, you know, is a response to a crisis. Can the government not kind of do something like that to respond to the crisis in this way?
Well, I think ultimately, yes, ideally accommodation on site, proper accommodation, long-term accommodation is the best investment, obviously.
Yeah, but in the meantime.
But in the meantime, about 40% of students live at home with their parents while in college. 18% go to specific student accommodation. And the remainder are probably digs or with family or whatever else. So, you know, you're talking about maybe 42% of the overall student going population that requires some accommodation, and maybe that can be explored. But it really, I mean, I'd prefer to see long-standing.
Yeah, as would everyone, you know. But I mean, even, you know, the co-living proposals.
But they didn't. They didn't go very far.
1,200. That's not affordable for students. It's simply not. Fionnán, what's your take on this?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of a veteran of the days of getting a copy of The Evening Herald down in Middle Abbey Street as soon as it came out, and running to a payphone to find digs for family members down in Rathmines. So I just do fear that this one will be worse than ever before. And actually, at this point, if you don't have accommodation sorted out for your student going to college, well, you really are kind of goose, particularly in Dublin. Situation in Cork, I'd be familiar with, has also stacked up an awful lot in recent years as the pressure has come on of young professionals taking what was traditionally student accommodation. Galway's had a similar scenario, not quite as bad in Limerick, and even the regional towns where the ITs are based and the now the UTs, they have also stacked up. So it doesn't just seem to be a Dublin problem anymore. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the big issue this year.
Some of the stats coming in from the CSO, an increase of just under 3,300 Ukrainians in the last 3 weeks. The highest percentage of those arriving, 38%, are categorised as one parent with children. And of those who attended employment support events, two-thirds were noted with English language proficiency being the challenge in securing employment. Lots of them want jobs, but the proficiency is not there. My understanding, rent-a-room scheme can't be an own-door unit, so it couldn't be, for example, a converted garage granny flat with its own door. Would love to know if it's still the case. Anyone know that?
I think it has to be
within the house.
I think it has to be a room in your
family. Another one says, just wondering, is there any way you could possibly be caught if you're over the 14k threshold? How would anybody know? I'd like to remain anonymous.
Sure they would.
Texter finishes up. Let's move on to antisocial. Let's move on to antisocial behaviour on public transport and elsewhere. Now, Cormac, both you and I have seen from the Dunleary constituency footage of a guy having the lard beaten out of him on Dunleary Dart Station platform. And we only know that because someone was on the other side of the barrier, safe enough from the attack to put it out there.
Yeah.
It is a problem, but one which, for example, Senator Barry Ward dismissed as being like a significant problem. Dublin, one of the safest cities in Europe.
No, look, unfortunately and sadly to say, those type of attacks, and they are criminal attacks, are too frequent. And we've seen it in the last couple of weeks. We saw it after the Bray Air show. Unfortunately, there were incidents on the Dart Line and on the platforms. We've seen it recently on the bus going into, Dublin Southwest. So we have to ensure that there is a better policing system. And in fact, this summer, Fianna Fáil have a public transport survey asking for the public. It's available on our website, asking for the public for their opinions on what they've observed or what's happened to them on public transport. And I think it is important, really, for us to ensure we get a dedicated public transport police service.
The Gardaí have dismissed
and
that.
I heard the Commissioner's comments. He was dismissive at present, and I think that's due to resources. But that's something that can be done by government, that can be increased in terms of funding and in terms of recruitment. But something has to be done, because this private security, while they're doing their best, there are operators, the staff of the transport providers are being attacked, as well as the public. And it's just simply not good enough.
Yeah, we do need absolutely to establish a Garda presence. And I think a specific Garda unit, a transport unit, is what's needed. But the truth is, the government are all over the place on this. I mean, Cormac is saying he supports the idea of a specific transport police service, but others from government and government representatives have said that they don't. I think that really they need to get their lines straight before they come out and start talking, because it's getting to the stage now where people won't want to travel on public transport, because we don't, we're hearing more and more of these incidents. The truth is, Dublin is a safe place to be, but public transport, there is a problem there. And the MBRU and SIPTU have been shouting about this for years. In the last week,
doesn't it depend on the Dublin that you inhabit? I mean, when we were talking about this during the week, people saying they don't feel safe knocking around the boardwalk, they don't feel safe crossing the bridge at Merchants Quay, they don't feel safe knocking around the GPO, they don't see a Garda presence anywhere. The Gardaí themselves then text in and say, we're finding it difficult even to get people to drive a patrol car out, because we just simply don't have the personnel.
But that's the point, you see. The Gardaí need, we need to see more Gardaí on the streets, but we also need to see a sustained investment. And I would like to see, the guards between the Minister for Justice and the Minister for Transport actually take a good, long, hard look at this. So your Gardaí unit to look at transport, it's not just to be sitting. I heard a councillor the other day saying, oh, should they be sitting on the Lewis just, going all over town doing nothing? That is not the case. But they will be able to examine areas, if there are areas that there are a particular problem, and put a policing plan in place to ensure that we make them safer.
I recall at a bank holiday weekend recently, being on a Dart, bunch of young fellas trying to kick the door in. They were drunk, they're smoking. So I look around for the sign. There's text service. So I texted the service a running update of what was happening. I was waiting for the helicopter with the SWAT team to come swooping in. I've never received any acknowledgement of those messages. Nobody ever rang me to follow up, nothing. And as far as I'm concerned, that narrative that there's a way of reporting these things is a complete and utter waste of time.
Window dressing.
This is a Garda policing problem. I've heard commentary during the week saying, well, the one place you won't find a Garda is on the public transport system. And you kind of have to say, well, why not? That is part of the city. It's part of the country. It's part of the public realm. There are people there. There are crimes taking place. Therefore, it's a Garda problem. So whatever about a designated policing force, I think it is a policing issue. And if our policing resources are not keeping up with the growth in the population, that is a funding and recruitment issue fundamentally.
Some of the texts coming in, I own three businesses in Dublin. It's a disgrace. Minor agro and major agro everywhere. So why do the people in power keep on insisting that ordinary citizens who report to us are supposed to feel safe, when clearly they don't feel safe whatever the reality is about the stats that are gathered internationally.
No, people don't feel safe. And I think that what they don't need is kite flying by the government. You know, one saying that, you know, we're going to look at transport policing, then another saying that we're not. I think they need to know that there is someone in government, one person, for the love and honour of God, taking a strategic look at this, because people don't feel safe, and people deserve to feel safe, not just in their capital city.
But you said it was safe, you know.
I believe that Dublin is on balance a safe place. However, there are issues with public transport and there are issues with certain areas that need to be tackled, and they will be tackled by an increased Garda presence. But the Gardaí are spread so thin at the moment, they're not able to do that work. We urgently need more Gardaí.
And the guards, I mean, the guards operated a Operation Twin Track that was 2 days, and they are doing their best, and they cooperate with security teams on the Lewis and on the Dart, which is great. But predominantly that's evening time. Antisocial behaviour, such as the incident that Fionnán's described and others, people have had hurled abuse at them when they're on the Dart. People are scared to bring their families on. This is a time where we're encouraging more people to use public transport.
But don't forget, when the guards did respond to all of those complaints, there were a very limited number of arrests.
But one of the reasons
they decided that it wasn't criminal behaviour. So, I mean, it's like the back chat that teenagers will give to guards. They have no fear. And then maybe they shouldn't be afraid of policemen. But I don't know, if you can give back chat to a guard and get away with it, where does that lead you?
Well, look, I think the presence itself is important. This is something the Fianna Fáil campaigned for in the general election. It was in our manifesto, and I think it's something that we are keen to see and we want to deliver on.
The station I feel safest in Dublin is actually Connolly, because it has got a raft of security, and I've seen incidents kick off there. And the private security are on top of it pretty fast. It's policed all day. There's extra resources on there at night and at weekend. So it can actually work if you're policing a situation properly. But there are, as you say, there are particular routes. There are particular times where you need it. You don't need people on the I doubt you need an armed guard on the 46A coming in and out.
So the idea is where the stuff is recurring, that's when you need maybe undercover
data analysis and
policing. But that's what a policing
patterns.
Authority, a transport policing authority is going to have or a transport policing unit will have the chance to do, is take a long-term strategic look at issues where there are issues and put a plan in place to deal with them.
I'll finish up on this comment from Kieran in Rathfarnham. I went to see Coldplay in Wembley Stadium last Tuesday, 90,000 fans, and I felt completely safe in a party atmosphere. Dublin is very unsafe and dirty. If you don't accept the facts, then you can't address the problem, so says Kieran. My thanks to Cormac Devlin, Fianna Fáil TD for Dunleary, Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland Editor with the Irish Independent, and Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal. That's all we have time for. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on Newstalk.